Join us at the Community Cats Podcast and the National Kitten Coalition for the Online Kitten Conference, which will be held on June 9th from 7 to 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time and June 10th and 11th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. This three-day virtual gathering, coordinated with the National Kitten Coalition, will feature presentations by experts on raising and saving kittens, setting up and managing kitten-centered shelter programs, and more. Click for details at www.communitycatspodcast.com and sign up today. Recordings will be available, so don't delay. We hope to see you there.
You've tuned in to the Community Cats Podcast. Ready? Let's go.
Welcome to the Community Cats Podcast. I'm your host, Stacey LeBaron. I've been involved helping homeless cats for over 20 years with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. The goal of this podcast is to expose you to amazing people who are improving the lives of cats. I hope these interviews will help you learn how you can turn your passion for cats into action. Now, today, we have two very special guests with us, Dr. Bob Whedon and Dr. Bob Murtaugh. We have them with us for today. And we're going to talk a bit about the AVMA and the president elections that are coming up this summer. But first, Dr. Murtaugh, could you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. Thanks, Stacey. I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you and to address your audience. I'm 4 decades in the profession of veterinary medicine, a University of Minnesota graduate. I've spent time in academia, the nonprofit sector, and private practice. I'm boarded in veterinary internal medicine and emergency and critical care. Got a special interest in the shelter world and animal welfare. I've been involved in Portland, Oregon with some changes around their animal control at one point in time. And I'm currently in Austin, Texas, and work very closely with Austin Pets Alive and a group called Shadow Cats to take care of business around here in Central Texas. So pleasure to be here today.
Thank you. And Dr. Whedon, you are a frequent flyer at the Community Cats Podcast. Just to share folks quick background on you.
Well, thank you, Stacey. It is a pleasure to be here again. I enjoy coming on because I believe in what you're doing and getting the word out about, responsible pet care, animal care, cat care, and in my world, dog care. Like Dr. Murtaugh, I'm a veterinarian. I've spent 4 decades in the profession too. I graduated from Purdue University, was in private practice for a while, went to academia, trained veterinary students at the University of Illinois in high quality, high volume spay neuter techniques. Retired and moved to Florida and thought I'd play golf every day, but decided that I'd rather spay cats than play golf. And I'm working now 3 days a week sterilizing animals here in Florida. Also got a legislative initiative going where we're trying to get the Practice Act changed to allow veterinarians who are licensed in another jurisdiction and in good standing to be able to do spay-neuter here in Florida to help with the shortage of manpower in the spay-neuter community. So, and I support Dr. Murtaugh's candidacy for president-elect of the AVMA. He's a forward thinker. I've gotten to know him fairly well recently and would be very proud to have him represent me within that organization.
So, Dr. Whedon, you mentioned this, so I'm going to ask Dr. Murtaugh this question. What role does the AVMA play in rules, legislation, regulations? What is it really that the AVMA does?
Yeah, the AVMA's primary role is advocacy, and they're involved in legislative initiatives in support or against, depending upon the circumstance, both on a federal level and on a state level, and have a very broad legal team and lobbyists that help us on a profession-wide level with regard to many issues. So they testify before state legislatures and front of Congress and have a large role in dealing with issues, whether it's spay-neuter or avian influenza or take your pick, So.
And why would you like to be president of the AVMA?
Yeah, so like Dr. Whedon, I retired recently from the active day-to-day aspects of our profession, and still feel a passion for issues. And I feel we have some significant challenges. The good news is there are challenges of abundance. I mean, we have on all fronts a shortage of veterinary providers, and we need to have some vision with regard to not just short-term fixes, but also intermediate and long-term sustainable plans to address the issues around the workforce shortage in our profession.
So you were talking about workforce shortages, and there are some short-term and medium-term and long-term issues there. Can you specify that a little bit more? Is it veterinarian shortages, technicians, supply shortages? What are the issues that you see, or is it multifaceted?
Yeah, it's a multifaceted problem, so it requires sort of a multi-pronged approach. But when I speak about workforce shortages, it's primarily numbers of people in various roles. I think the AVMA's focus, and rightly so at the moment, is on efficiencies in practice and utilization of technicians, areas that we've sort of neglected for a long period of time. And so I'm grateful to see that they have those sort of short-term goals in mind, and that's important. But, you know, there's 15,000 ads on Indeed for open positions for veterinarians across the country right now. So that's a job posting service. 40% of shelters, you guys know this, don't have adequate veterinary services on a regular basis. So we have some needs that aren't going to be met simply by improving efficiencies in clinical practice or equine practice or take your pick. We have some real needs for additional people to enter our profession, both on the staff professional side and the veterinary professional side.
What are you seeing happening at veterinary schools? There's huge costs involved with becoming a veterinarian these days. And my understanding is there's quite a few more law schools than there are veterinary schools out there. What are your thoughts in that arena?
Yeah, that's an interesting statement you just made, Stacy. So I think we graduate somewhere around 35,000 lawyers a year, and we graduate around 4,000 veterinarians a year across the country. So we face an issue of from 1980 until 2010, we opened up only one veterinary school, and that was Western U in Pomona, California. Population of the United States grew by 100 million people during that 30-year period of time. So we're a little bit behind where we need to be with regard to workforce. You're exactly right about cost of education. The good news there is the trend in the past few years has been that ratio of debt to income has come down significantly and is in a reasonably good position from a standpoint of veterinarians being able to handle their student loans. I think we still have challenges in arenas like shelter medicine and rural animal practice, where maybe the income aspects aren't what they still maybe need to be, but you know, the trends are good there, and I think you know, if you graduate 8,000 veterinarians, you're going to supply a lot more to all of the areas of need than you do when you only graduate 4,000 veterinarians. So
there are a lot of questions around sort of the state regulations and how they interrelate with one another. I'm up here in New England, so I can drive an hour and I'll be in another state, but I can't have a veterinarian from New Hampshire come into Vermont to do a spay-neuter spay-a-thon, you know, without having license in that state, without having something called reciprocity. Is that a conversation that you are seeing out there happening frequently? And maybe explain a little bit more detail about what reciprocity is.
Yeah, I think, and Dr. Whedon can comment on this as well, since he's knee-deep into it. But, you know, reciprocity is, you know, I would be an advocate for nationwide reciprocity with respect to people that are licensed and in good standing in various states, that they could easily obtain a license in another state. I think for the activity you're describing, Stacy, simply providing an exemption, especially in a close area, a close knit area like New England, where people could cross borders easily and go back and forth for a service to society like spay neuter. If you're a veterinarian in good standing in New Hampshire and want to go to Burlington for a spay-a-thon, and you're working with licensed veterinarians from the state of Vermont, a license exemption or something of that nature for that particular purpose and the preventative care that might come along with that single visit sort of opportunity for new pet owners or existing pet owners, I think is something that probably should be addressed. And that's, again, something where the AVMA, working with the American Association of State Veterinary Boards and others, could make that change, not without some difficulty, because there's always people that are advocating for states' rights, but it can be done if the push is there and the reasonableness is there and the collaboration is there. So I think it's an example of where there needs to be more sort of pointed advocacy on the part of the AVMA as an example across states, bringing us together instead of not exercising that influence that an organization that's national could have on our professional approaches.
I'm going to ask Dr. Whedon to jump in here and maybe ask a few questions about access to care, equaling access to spay neuter. And before we jump into that topic, though, Dr. Whedon, if you do want to add anything, since you are very focused on reciprocity at this point in time, feel free to chime in with a few words on that, too.
Well, I do want to comment, because the American Veterinary Medical Association in 2020 released a report entitled The Economic State of the Veterinary Profession. And what really struck me about that was that it was estimated that approximately 13%, or about a little over 9,000, of the U.S. companion animal veterinarians were over 65 years of age. And another 26%, a little over 18,000, were between 56 and 65. Now, you know, I live in Florida. We have this thing called snowbirds. We have a number of veterinarians who may spend part of their time here in the state from perhaps Vermont, where, you know, I got my air conditioning on today, Stacey. I bet you got your heat on. and a lot of these snowbird veterinarians could very possibly contribute to this manpower shortage. And one of the things we're doing in Florida is we have legislation in both the House and the Senate that exempts veterinarians who are licensed in good standing in another jurisdiction from the need to obtain a Florida veterinary license in order to provide spay neuter and wellness, preventative wellness services at the time of spay neuter. And that's kind of a nice segue, I think, into the discussion of spay neuter being an integral part of access to care. So I'll throw it back to you.
So, Dr. Murtaugh, in your opinion, what does access to care really mean?
Yeah, I think it's several levels. I mean, I think there's obviously an economic aspect, there's a geographic aspect, there's a species-specific aspect, and I'm probably missing a few things there. But, you know, for me, it's again, all of the above. We know that, especially on the pet animal side, that the human-animal bond is beneficial for human health. It's not simply a nice to have, or a privilege. It actually helps sustain well-being of individuals, and there's, you know, scientific evidence now to prove that in many regards. So, I think legislatively looking at taking that as an example, we could estimate the benefits to human healthcare costs. Maybe we should reflect some of that back into the economic standing of people that have lower incomes that could benefit from having pets in their household or being able to just address the basic needs of those pets. So it's essentially kind of a food stamps for dogs and cats program, if you will.
There's been an estimate of 2.7 million sterilization surgeries that did not happen during the pandemic. And then also, I have heard phrases like, oh, well, the low-cost, high-volume spay-neuter clinics, they've been doing all the spay-neuter, so private practice clinics haven't been doing as much spay-neuter as they may have 20-plus years ago. Do you feel that that's a trend that has been happening? And is there a way for us to get spay neuter back into private practice?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, Dr. Whedon's probably, again, in a better position to comment on that than I am. But yeah, I think there has been a trend. I mean, I think, you know, and it's a good trend because I think the advent of high volume spay neuter services in many communities has actually helped us with population control and potential zoonotic disease spread and many other things. So there's benefits there. You know, I think given the workforce shortage that we have in many practice environments, that it would probably be hard to ramp it up. I mean, everybody's trying to swim as fast as they can against the current these days. And so I think, you know, things like Dr. Whedon's proposal in Florida for veterinarians that have the ability and the interest and the passion that we should try to harness that and try to actually increase spay neuter services across the country. And again, here's an area where the AVMA and state VMAs could be advocates for that sort of volunteerism, if you will. And it in the end, it's helping our society, it's helping our profession, it's doing the right thing, in my view. So,
you know, I was at VMX, I don't know, what, about a month ago, and I was talking to a Florida veterinarian practice owner about this impending legislation. And she was like, oh my God, that would be wonderful because I don't do spay neuter in my practice. I just don't have the time nor the expertise. But if there was somebody who was semi-retired that I could hire, say, 2 days a week just for the morning to do, you know, spay neuter, they can do more than one an hour. And actually, it's kind of like the old saying, you know, I just wanted the milk. I didn't want to have to buy the whole cow. So if I could get someone to come in and just do spay neuter under this proposed exemption, it would generate income for Florida licensed veterinarians that are practice owners. And in my mind, you know, that's a win-win situation.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, it's community service in that locale. It's also a practice builder from a standpoint of PR and marketing, as well as just new client acquisition. So I think that sort of hadn't really thought of it in that context, Bob. I had thought of it more as a, you know, high volume spay neuter locations, but the sort of marrying of the private sector with your initiative could really, because I'm sure there are ORs and practices that are silent for parts of days or days of the week. So that could be really strong sort of geographic spread, if you will, to get the job done. So I like it.
Well, and also in the less populated areas where the demand wouldn't be that huge, maybe somebody's coming for just a day or two to go play golf at the golf course around the corner that they've always wanted to play at, but they do a couple of days of surgery on the side to make the trip worthwhile.
Yeah, no, good points.
Cats of the Wild is the podcast for cat lovers who want to make a difference. Listen to inspiring and engaging stories of wild cat conservation and learning how you can help protect cats all over the world. Search for Cats of the Wild in your favorite podcast app now.
Do you want to make things easier on yourself and the others in your organization? Our friends at Dubert have teamed up with the Dallas Pets Alive and Spay Neuter Network teams, and together they have created the Companion Case Management Module. It allows you to be more proactive with all your organization's needs, create cases for your clients, and organize them by type. Whether it is a rehoming situation, a pet parent needing food or medical assistance, or simply spay and neuter inquiries, CCM can help you manage all of them right from the Dubert system. Plus, a huge bonus, it allows you to connect with those clients right from the case, so there is no need to open up new windows for emails or pull out your phone for text messages. Check it out and learn more at www.dubert.com to get started today.
Ever wanted to quickly connect, collaborate, or problem solve with others in the animal welfare field who are, you know, real people? Look no further than Maddie's Pet Forum. Maddie's Pet Forum brings people of animal welfare together with the common goal to keep more people and pets together. We share ideas, expertise, offer each other support, resources, and more. Visit forum.maddiespetforum.org/cats. Maddie's Pet Forum. Come for an answer, stay for the community.
Dr. Whedon, is there anything else on the topic of access to care that you would like to ask Dr. Murtara?
You know, I firmly believe that that stay-neuter is an essential element of access to care. And I guess I would ask Dr. Murtaugh if he feels the same way. You know, I'm thinking that, you know, we've done such a good job of getting the have your pets fixed message out there. And so clients are motivated to get their animals sterilized. The problem now is that you know, they're having a hard time finding these services. And because of the lack of access to care, as a result of a shortage of spay-neuter surgeons. And you know, this obviously has the unintended consequence of leading to more litters of puppies and kittens. And the cause of these unwanted litters has shifted from simply irresponsible owners to a lack of accessible care. And so I guess I would ask Dr. Murtaugh his feelings on the position of spay-neuter in the whole access to care. You know, I don't mean to be answering my own question, but I sterilize animals 3 days a week, and a large percentage of the ones I do have never been to a veterinarian before. And we have the opportunity to get them started on a lifetime of preventative wellness. So, Dr. Murtaugh, if you want to comment on your feelings in that arena, I would appreciate it.
Yeah, I would just jump on what you just said there, Bob, and that's the fact that this is an entry point, whether it's, and many times it's first-time pet owners, and an opportunity for education around preventative care and providing them with additional resources to follow up following that encounter for the spay-neuter. I think it's important that we address it, not just from a standpoint of population control and COVID catch-up, but for the reasons long-term that you're talking about, which is it provides us with an opportunity to get people started right and to give them resources for contact if they have questions as they begin their life journey with their new family member, you know. So I think supporting spay-neuter is important for access to care on pet level, most importantly, and on a lot of levels. So I'm 100% behind it.
I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about the staffing makeup of a veterinary practice. So you have your veterinarian, you've got your technicians, you will have a practice manager. I'm already hearing some people say sometimes it's harder to find the certified veterinary technicians, harder to find a good practice manager. So maybe we're not just being faced with a veterinary shortage, but it's almost a full staffing shortage. Are you seeing that in the clinics that you're visiting?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, I think we're challenged on all those levels. Maybe I didn't make that point strong enough a few minutes ago, but yeah, I mean, we only graduate 5,000 veterinary technicians from 230 or so programs across the country on an annual basis. So again, it's the same numbers game that we face with veterinarians, is that and the other aspect of it with technicians is because we've often underutilized them and underpaid them for a significant period of time. They go on and do nursing on the human side or move outside of the profession, retention is problematic to some extent with veterinarians, but much more problematic with regard to technicians. Hence I applaud the ABMA and others' efforts to try to highlight and move forward on issues of tech utilization and recognition of credentialing and all of that stuff, which helps with job satisfaction and retention. The same thing can be said for, you know, certified practice managers. It's a thankless job and many times underpaid for the effort as well. So there's a lot of turnover and a lot of attrition. So I think we need to pay attention to ways to support all aspects of our veterinary healthcare team.
And you had mentioned one aspect of veterinary technicians not being fully utilized. I would think that maybe there are chances for growth there, or is there a mid-level physician's assistant position? Is there some other new position that could be created that offers a greater level of responsibility to help take some of the pressures off the veterinarians in the practice?
Yeah, I think you hit on another key point there from my viewpoint, Stacey, and this gets into more of the sort of intermediate or long-term fixes that can be sustainable. So it's another opportunity for a career track for veterinary technicians. Veterinary technicians in our practices should be doing everything except diagnosis, treatment plans, prescribing, and surgery. So the a mid-level provider akin to the physician assistant in veterinary medicine would have some of those responsibilities. They could help with the treat and treat emergencies and an urgent care. They could help Dr. Whedon get his spay neuters done because they could do minor surgical procedures or ones where it's repetitive and they can become expert at it. And they make more money and meet a need. So I think veterinarians have a hard time letting go, hence the fact that veterinary technicians are underutilized. I mean, I was just at a meeting this past weekend where a couple of veterinarians my age were talking about the fact that they still, have struggled to not put every catheter in, which is crazy, stuff like that. So I think we need to think broadly and we need to think futuristically about the fact that how come in human medicine they have 500,000 nurse practitioners and physician assistants and people like them and they do a good job. And yes, are there problems and is there potential liability? Sure. But, don't be stopped by the what ifs when there's the what can be's, So I think that's an area that we need to look at from a collaborative and a broad based approach. The ABMA's current position is one of it's not important. We need to focus on technicians. Well, we need to focus on everything because we have needs that are short term, long term, and beyond. And we're not going to get there if we just do it in a stepwise fashion. We need to do it in a parallel fashion.
And I'd like to build on that. It's a really good point, Dr. Murtaugh. I think for a long time, I was one of those old guys that you were talking about that, had to place my own catheters and take my own radiographs. And it wasn't until I got involved with high quality, high volume spay neuter that I realized that the level of efficiency is so much greater if I do what I do best, which is surgery, and let them do what they do best to get them ready for me to do surgery on. And, 30 years ago, before high quality, high volume spay neuter became a thing, when we started seeing these spay neuter clinics popping up, I was like, oh man, how are they doing this? They cutting corners and you hear a lot of older veterinarians make that comment. Well, they must be providing substandard care. Actually, there's a lot of evidence that shows that outcomes from a high quality, high volume spay neuter clinic are consistently better because these people do the same thing over and over and over again, and they become very good at it. And the human literature supports that same thought. And it dawned on me that the reason we are so efficient when I'm sitting there doing surgery and I'm looking around and seeing, somebody's recovering, somebody's prepping, somebody's, knocking down. It's almost like a symphony of these people who are allowed to practice to their limit of their ability or what they can legally do. And so many of us, particularly us older guys, we it's so hard for us to let go and to allow that symphony to play. And I'm just amazed on a daily basis when I see, when I can personally do 30 to 40 surgeries a day, the only way I could do that is by having this support team that is exceptional. And that the same thing's in private practice. The veterinarian doesn't need to be taking his own radiographs, doesn't need to be putting in his own catheters, those sorts of things.
Yeah, and I think that can make a big dent in practice situations where throughput is an issue and access to care is problematic in our profession. But it's still not going to be the whole answer. And so I think I would come back to the fact that we need to be multifaceted in our approach because the problems are multifaceted as well.
So, Dr. Murtaugh, if I'm a veterinarian member of the AVMA, like Dr. Whedon, how can we support your candidacy?
Yeah, so the election for the AVMA's president-elect is done by the House of Delegates, which has an appointed delegate for each state and 20 organizations. So there's 70 people that vote on your behalf. And so if you're an AVMA member, you have access to that roster of people and can identify who it is in your state that is your delegate and your alternate delegate. And you can reach out to them with not only an endorsement of a candidate, but also any issues you might have that you want to bring to their attention so that the AVMA can be aware and act on your behalf and the behalf of others in the profession.
And if I am not an AVMA member, but want to support your efforts, is there anything that we can do to help?
Yeah, that's a little bit of a tricky, slippery slope is that, you know, the election rules are AVMA member advocacy otherwise I think you have to be careful. So you can help me indirectly, but not directly, or any other candidate, if you will. So.
But we can certainly support the cause of spay neuter and support that and, you know, bring that topic to the forefront with our local veterinarians. We support our feline fixed by five veterinarians that we have through the United Spay Alliance. And so with the hopes that...
Stacey, I hate to interrupt.
Go for it.
AVMA has endorsed that, which is... It was a little surprising to me because they're sometimes very slow to pick up on these novel things. But the AVMA has endorsed 6x5, and which is a great thing. I think more and more veterinarians are now aware of that and are embracing it as a result.
Yes, and we're very grateful and thankful for that. I mean, and I think it is wonderful, the understanding the importance of fixing a cat before the age of 5 months, and that the program is growing and the participation of the veterinary community is growing, regardless of whether it's affordable or not affordable, private practice, nonprofit organization, it doesn't matter. It's feline fixed by five. And so that's a great unifying force for all of our veterinarians to be together and to build from that. Dr. Murtaugh, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners before we close out today?
No, I just applaud you, Stacey, and Dr. Whedon for your efforts on behalf of cats in particular, but the pet owning population and support for our profession and society. So, thanks for the opportunity to be here today and the outreach, and I look forward to hopefully serving as your next president-elect of the AVMA and helping to push some of these initiatives forward as well.
Excellent. Dr. Whedon, any last closing comments on your part?
I'd just like to echo what Dr. Murtaugh says that, you know, I said early on that he's a forward thinker, he's a visionary, and I know that he would support access to care issues. I know he would support spay-neuter being an essential element of access to care. And, you know, who knows, if we get this legislation passed in Florida, maybe the AVMA then can look at that as a model for other states. And I know that with Dr. Murtaugh in a leadership role with the AVMA that would happen. So I wish you well and will continue to advocate for your candidacy.
Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you both for joining us today. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much for being part of the Community Cats podcast. And hopefully we'll have you on in the future when you're elected.
Look forward to that.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.